Now this is my kind of party. Grab a friend, bring the guns. It's time for the Co-Opticast.
Hey, and welcome back to another fantastic episode of the Co-Opticast. This is episode number 68 for Sunday, July 3rd, 2011. I am your host, Mike Katsoufrakis, and I am joined by the irascible Nick Paleo.
Wow, that's a big word to describe me.
I guess. Anyway, it's been a while. I think it's been since the E3 wrap-up, since we've had a podcast out there, so... we should probably talk about some co-op news, but first let's talk about what we've been playing while I stumble over my tongue.
Curse you, tongue. I've been playing Brink on the 360. I've got a renewed interest in the game thanks to our community, who plays pretty much every Friday night. It's a good group of guys that have been playing together, so I joined that the past 2 weeks.
Is it replacing Shadowrun?
It's a different group of guys, but yeah, you know, it kind of has that Shadowrun feel in that it's a very balanced kind of a game. I mean, you've played it, so you know, but
yeah.
So I've been having fun with that, and it's kind of nice to build up some new guys. I've been doing more engineer, and because I didn't play that like at all on the PC version, so getting to see some.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the engineer. Dropping mines is just hilarious.
Yeah, it's fun. So.
Especially when everyone starts pussyfooting around once they know that they've stepped on a mine in that area, and then you see them kind of trying to jump over everything, and then you just put another mine right where, you know, maybe about a yard or two away from where the other one was.
Yeah.
So they jump over where it was and land on the new one.
Yeah, so I've been enjoying it. As nice as the game is on PC, I think it actually works better as a console game. Just the freedom of movement thing and with the voice chat and stuff, how well it's integrated on 360. I really like it. They're better. Mm-hmm. I also picked up Child of Eden on 360, which is the...
And then you beat it an hour and a half later, right?
I actually haven't beaten it yet. I've only played it maybe an hour and a half, but the way they kind of have some artificial length stuff is you have to earn so many stars to unlock the next levels. And you can't like earn enough stars. Even if you perfect the level going through, you have to earn you have to play through it once or two or three times to get enough stars. It's basically res. There's a few new things implemented. You have two different kinds of attacks, and the one attack only works against certain guys, and you'll have to do some things there. It integrates real video into it really interestingly. There's the main character, I can't think of her name, what it is, but basically the person you're trying to save.
She a hot techno babe?
She's a hot Asian girl. And
all right.
And she's trapped in the garden of whatever, of Eden, which Eden apparently is actually the internet in this thing. Anyway, besides all of that, but There's a video you watch of her in the beginning, and she's walking around in the garden, and there's flowers and all this stuff, and her white dress is flowing, and they keep using that video in the levels themselves, and you see the pieces of it kind of all in the polygons and stuff.
Interesting.
It's kind of cool. It's you know, and the levels have good variety to it. You have your techno matrixy kind of level. You have your nature-esque level, kind of just like Rez, you know, that each area has its own distinct theme to it, and enemies and stuff. And the music's great. The Kinect stuff, it works okay. It's a little floaty. I've just been playing with the controller. I played the one level with the Kinect and one with the controller, and I was like, okay, I'll just use the controller.
Well, that's good, because I don't have a Kinect, and I would like to play Child of Eden.
Yeah, there's...
I was wondering which was better.
There's really no reason to have a Kinect for it. Like, it's definitely not required. It doesn't add anything. In fact, I'd almost say it's a little bit slower to switch between the attacks. I've also been playing FIFA 11 on both my iPad and now on 360. I picked up the iPad version this week because it was on sale for 99 cents. And it's basically a full console game. It's really... pretty slick, does some cool things with the touch controls and stuff like that, but it just made me really want the console version, so I went out yesterday and bought it. Oh. So I've been playing that.
Are they still doing that crazy co-op mode where, you know, one man takes one position?
I haven't tried any of the online stuff. I've just been basically practicing because it's been... I think the last FIFA game I played was the World Cup game, which was 2 years ago now, 3 years ago. And even that, I didn't play that much. So
you want to know what the last FIFA game I played was?
FIFA 87. I don't know.
It was World Cup 98 on the N64.
Nice.
Yeah. It's been a little bit.
So it's good. It's solid. The presentation on FIFA has always been top notch. So yeah, I'm enjoying that. Also been playing Dungeon Siege 3. I played through most of that, single player and co-op, and played a little bit with Tally and co-op with that. And it's a solid action RPG that just totally blew the co-op idea. You know, local co-op with it works just fine. You know, most likely you're going to be playing local co-op with the same person. So it doesn't matter that the progress of your guest player isn't saved. But for online co-op, you get nothing for joining an online co-op game. There's really no point in joining it other than to get achievements.
That's reason enough for some people.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is. but I think at the very least they could let you bring back some gold and maybe some items or something to your game.
It's pretty sad when Fable 2 beats your online co-op.
Yeah, Fable 2, is as bad as that co-op was, at least they let you bring some stuff back. I think it was just the gold, but hey. Yeah, it was something. But it really is. It's a really pretty game. I like the combat in it. It's real fluid. Some of the boss battles are insanely frustrating, and that's actually where I kind of quit. It's not the final boss battle, but it's one about three quarters of the way through, and it just has this multi-stage thing that just keeps throwing stuff at you. And I was playing online a couple times. I had four people join in to help out, and it was brutal. So
wow.
I'll have to go back and give it another shot, but I gave it two or three nights where I tried, and just no luck there. And finally, I've been playing some Fear 3. Not as much as I'd like, and actually I'm going to be playing some tonight with Kat after the show. But that game...
I've heard very wildly divergent opinions on that game.
Really? I'm actually surprised, because I think it's, from a pure co-op perspective, it's one of the best games out this year. Because there's such a variety in it, and it does some really different stuff. The campaign itself is completely different depending on who you play as. You know, there's a decent amount of length. Then you got two separate co-op modes, multiplayer for four people. You have the effing run mode, which is just, pure adrenaline rush, balls to the wall kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Everyone's screaming at itself. And then you have the more strategy-oriented, slower pace contractions mode, which is a bit like Call of Duty's survival mode, World at War survival mode, the Nazi zombie thing.
Right. I guess what I'd heard is that the campaign isn't really so great. Like, the combat stuff's fun, but the rumor I heard is that this game was originally going to be Fear 2 before the shenanigans about the naming and the rights happened.
Uh-huh.
You remember, Monolith was going to call it Project Origin.
Right, yeah.
They had the rights to the characters and the story, but they didn't have the rights to the name.
Yeah.
And apparently this game was started as Fear 2.
Interesting.
Before the Sierra sale and everything went through.
Yeah.
So then Monolith got the name back. Then that came out as Fear 2. And this is just kind of asynchronous to the whole thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it takes place immediately after Fear 1.
Yeah. But I guess, like, the ending of Fear 2 is barely referenced in this, except in, like, the contractions mode and things like that.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I mean, from a story perspective and stuff, it's nothing to write home about, but it's just, it's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of replayability to it. You know, like I said,
well, we know, I've seen, you know, the co-op is great. You know, I played effing Run at PAX, yeah, and I knew it was awesome. It's just, I kind of play, for some dumb reason, I actually like the Fear, campaigns.
Yeah.
And, when I heard that the one in this isn't so great compared to, Fear 2, I was kind of a letdown.
Yeah. See, the thing, I actually didn't even finish Fear 2 'cause I wasn't a big fan of it. But this, I don't know, the combat is as Point Man and as Fettel, this is very, very satisfying. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, that's what I've been playing. What about you? What have you been playing? I know you've been diving into a certain RPG on the PC quite a bit.
I have been playing the... I've been playing a few games, especially since it's been three or four weeks since I've actually talked to our audience. So I'll start earlier. I played Alice Madness Returns, and I feel that game is being unfairly judged on what it's not versus what it is. It's basically a platformer. There's combat, and the combat is good, but it's not really the focus of the game. It's a lot of environmental platforming through really, really, really beautiful levels. And some of it is form over function. The game looks way better than it plays. But it's fun, and I really dug it, and I was a big fan of the original Alice on the PC back in, 2000 or so?
Yeah, it was a while ago.
And it's kind of cool because if you buy a new copy of Madness Returns, you get a voucher to download a piece of DLC, which enables a menu item in the game to actually play play the original game. And boy, it hasn't aged that well.
No.
It really hasn't. And it's really, because it was based entirely on mouse look. You remember how third person games used to play back then?
Yeah.
It's basically like you're pivoting around their neck with a camera and running around with the WASD keys. And it was cool for its time. The art direction holds up pretty well, but yeah, it's pretty hard to play, especially on the console. Played through most of L.A. Noire, which is just an awesome game. I really dig it. Towards the end of the Vice section of the game at the moment. And, I love old school adventure games. And this feels kind of like the natural progression of the adventure game, which is, really fun. And, the acting is really well done. The motion capture technology is pretty incredible. The open world stuff is kind of forgettable, and I generally ignore it. You have an option to let your partner drive to all the crime scenes, so I generally have them do that. And I've actually been playing a lot of Shadows of the Damned, which, oh my god, it is so freaking juvenile, but unlike Duke Forever, it's juvenile in that way that you can't help but have a big stupid grin on your face.
Yeah.
Because of all the dumb, dumb, dumb jokes it's making. And it knows it's making dumb jokes, and it plays it essentially as a satire.
Yeah.
So unlike Duke, who takes himself way too seriously when he's making abortion jokes, there's a lot of jokes about the male genitalia.
Yeah, I saw Justin McElroy from Joystick put a tweet out, I think it was this morning, and basically said, "Well played, Shadows of the Damned. You successfully made me Google big boner tips."
Yeah, and actually, that's the part I'm stuck at, because that part is really hard.
Oh, yeah. I see what you did there.
Actually, it is quite difficult. you see what I did there?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah. Your main weapon is called the boner.
Mm-hmm.
And then you upgrade it and it becomes the hot boner. And then the hot boner's special ability is to create a sticky bomb.
Oh, jeez.
And the game refers to it as deploying your sticky payload.
Oh, my God.
I mean, there's a level where you're running through a nightmare scenario, and the naked gyrating torso of your girlfriend is the platform you're running across, and it's insane. It's absolutely insane. I don't know if you ever played No More Heroes, but it's, you know, Suda 51 is heavily involved with the game, and it is just absolutely freaking insane. I mean, the character refers to himself in the third person, and he says his name is Garcia effing Hotspur, except he doesn't drop, he doesn't censor himself. It's so much to the point that that's essentially what everyone calls him.
Interesting.
Yes. It is very, very, very fun, and it's going to get buried because there's no marketing for it, and it's probably, I would say, as far as like console stuff, it's probably the best game I've played all summer so far. It's really fun. And last but not least, I've been playing The Witcher 2, which is amazing. It's essentially like playing a game out of the next generation right now. Like, remember how when the original Crysis came out and it was just so much better looking than everything, and you're like, oh my god, this game is like, oh, PC gaming, ha, ah, look at you console idiots. You know, it's a game that elitists can say, look at my platform, I have validated my $800 video card.
Yeah.
Witcher 2 is essentially that right now. It looks really great. The art direction is incredible. The world realization is incredible. I could spend the entire podcast talking about the attention to detail that they've put into this game. Like, you know how when you played Uncharted 2 and you're running through like the Nepalese city and each building was immaculately laid out and all the little details and everything?
Yeah.
It's like, imagine something that looks like it's crafted with the same level of care, but has graphics that are a step beyond. And the fact that it runs at like 60 frames per second on my 2-year-old PC is incredible. But yeah, it is. It's really great, and it ties to the first one, but you don't need to have played the first one to really understand the sequel. So you should definitely check it out, especially since it had already hit at least one Steam sale.
It's still on sale. I had looked today. It's still at $33.49 price or whatever it was.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
I actually haven't... I mean, we might as well transition here. We can knock this quick one off the list, but I actually haven't bought anything on the Steam Summer Sales yet. Been tempted to, but...
The only one I'd been tempted by was Just Cause 2 for $5, but
yeah,
I just don't have time.
Yeah, that's been my biggest thing too. I have a stack of games, and mostly console games, of things I've been wanting to play. And but yeah, Witcher 2 definitely tempted me. They had Dragon Age 2 on sale today for I think like $25. That was really tempting.
If you had to choose between those, I'd definitely say Witcher.
Yeah, you know, I would be leaning towards that more anyway, just because the whole Dragon Age thing is still kind of fresh in me and from finishing the first one. And anyway, but yeah, there hasn't been too many. I mean, there's been some good stuff on sale, like games that if I hadn't played them, I probably would have pulled the trigger on, like the Transformers game with $7.50, the War for Cybertron.
I know they had all of the Assassin's Creed games for like $25 or something.
Yeah, I even almost pulled the trigger on Modern Warfare 2. Because I think that was $15.
Well, you know, it was $5 was Bad Company 2.
Yeah.
The PC version of that is great.
Yeah, that was another one I thought about. But it's just like, there's just so many good games and so much to play. And I just got in the beta for Civ World on Facebook. So I started to play that. So that's going to be eating up some of my gaming time, too.
Yeah. And we've also been playing the Google Plus game.
Yeah.
They drag all your friends into little circles and watch the cute animation. Yeah.
So, but yeah, so Steam is having their summer sale. It's, I guess, the next, 6 days now? And every day they have new deals. And it seems like the previous day's deals hold on for a day after, too. Maybe
it's something they overlap by something like 5 or 6 hours, if I remember correctly.
Okay, yeah. Well, like I said, but even like this morning when I checked, The Witcher was still that same price, which I thought was odd. Unless it got like, you know, maybe it's through the whole thing. Some of them are, and some of the games are going on sale multiple times. Like Torchlight 2 was on sale the first day, I believe, for $4 or $5. Today it's on sale for $2.
Torchlight 2.
Or Torchlight, I'm sorry. The first one.
Don't get my hopes
up. Yeah, sorry. So, yeah. But if you need a, you know, you got a new gaming PC and you want to buff up your library real quick, these Steam sales are the way to do it.
And if you want to show off your new gaming PC, apparently Nick says play Civ 5. I say play Witcher 2.
Well, I don't think Civ 5 really shows it off, but...
I know, it was just, you know, it was running chuggy, and then you upgraded and it ran smooth, and we're very happy.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, you know, but the funny thing is, it's not the graphics in that game so much as it is the processor. The
CPU time. Yeah.
So... All right, let's move on to the news.
Okay. Earlier in the, I guess last week, we had the opportunity to get a presentation of Catherine from Atlas, and it's a game I've been looking forward to a lot because it's essentially the first HD game that they've put together. They published Demon's Souls, and they published some other stuff, but really, like, Atlas's main dev team, like the guys who do the Shin Megami Tensei and Persona stuff. This is their first HD game, and it's not an RPG. It is a block puzzler. You push blocks and you climb towers, but it's got a story that at first glance seems a lot like an H game. You know, you're like, oh, I'm going to be seducing women and boning them, and you know, doing so in as crude an anime fashion as possible. But really, you know, they literally showed us the first hour and a half of the game. And it was more about the exploration of a relationship and how a man might want to deal with not wanting to make a commitment and then something hot and new comes along and you have a little morality meter of how you actually hit the situations in the game. Something that was really interesting to me is you periodically get like text messages from your friends, and the game lets you respond to them to the point where you actually draft the text message you send back.
Uh-huh.
And what you say back and forth between them, it affects the morality meter and apparently affects portions of the story and the ending.
Huh.
So that was pretty cool. But the interesting thing is they actually showed that it had some co-op and competitive multiplayer, and both modes are two players and a shared screen. And they're essentially the same thing, except one you're trying to screw over the other player. Basically, you're climbing the tower, and the tower crumbles beneath you, and you have to move the blocks to get around. But in co-op, you can't do some of the moves that in single player would get you along because you can lock out your co-op partner, and you know, if they die, you fail.
Mm-hmm.
And the competitive mode was essentially, this is the same thing, except you're trying to screw over the other player. Like, you can make blocks fall on their heads and kill them, mm-hmm. or you can, you know, make it so they couldn't possibly progress by putting immovable blocks in front of them, and things like that. So, you know, it looked pretty fun. Actually, one other thing they showed us is that in the bar that serves as kind of the between level hub, there's an arcade machine that is a retro, like an old 80s style isometric puzzle game. It's exactly the same game, except it's done in 8-bit style, and you have like a set number of moves to complete each level rather than the unlimited ones you get in the campaign.
Hmm. It actually sounds pretty interesting to me. I didn't have much interest in it before, but
yeah, sounds pretty unique. You can see shades of a lot of other, like, essentially it feels like an arcade game. Like you're trying to, you're in a level and you're trying to puzzle your way through a tower, and you're essentially competing for a high score along the way. And yeah, there's a ton of story that pads everything out, but it seems cool and it's unique. And the guys who do the Persona games have, you know, if you don't know your Shin Megami Tensei history, that was essentially a really hardcore first-person role-playing game in the vein of something like Wizardry. And when they made the Persona series, they took that type of game, like that type of hardcore JRPG, and meshed it with a dating sim. And the power of your characters and the magic they wield is based on how strong their bonds are with their friends. So, you know, they're known for kind of taking a genre, twisting it on its head or mashing it up, and this seems like they're going to do the same thing to me.
Cool.
So, yeah, let's move on. Here's something. World of Warcraft is free to play until level 20. And that sounds really awesome, except what this really is the trial version that you can get, the 7-day trial, has no expiration on it now. You can essentially play the first 20 levels forever, but you're restricted to all the same restrictions that a trial account gets. So you can't, you can be invited to a group, but you can't start groups, and essentially paying players have to initiate everything with you in order for it to happen. And it sounds really restrictive, and it is, but what happened is Chinese gold farmers and hackers and spam accounts were abusing the free trials to the point where Blizzard essentially had to make it so that they couldn't do a lot of the social stuff. So if you're looking to get a co-op fix off the free-to-play version, my advice to you is to just see if you can get the Battle Chest, which has WoW and the first expansion. It's $20 and it comes with a free month, and that'll give you a much better and more wholesome look at what the game actually is.
Plus the WoW base game now has the Cataclysm.
The vanilla WoW, whenever they update the game, the class changes and things like that make it all the way down to the base players. So while you won't be able to go into the new dungeons and stuff, you will be able to, you know, if they change a class ability around, you'll still be able to see those changes. And, man, I hate this. The Resident Evil the Mercenaries 3D. You know that bonus mode from Resident Evil 4 and that, what is it, $5 or $10 piece of DLC from RE5?
Yep.
Yeah, they're selling that for $40. And, man, that mode was okay, but $40 for something I could get for $5? And the fact that you can only ever have one save and you can never delete it, that's crap. And Capcom is insisting that it's not because they don't want you to trade the game in. Like, trade the game in. That's not why we did it. But they didn't really give a good reason. And it sucks. Have you played Mercenaries 3D?
No, I haven't. I thought about picking it up when I picked up FIFA, but I was like, I didn't even know anybody that has it to really give it a fair shake. So I figure I'll get to it eventually.
I don't know. I mean, it's to the point where everyone thought that they were going, that this was to prevent used game sales, and at least temporarily GameStop actually didn't accept it as a trade-in. And I wouldn't blame them. You know, if I bought a game, like, imagine getting something like Oblivion, and you buy it used, but there was one save game, and it was baked onto, you know, hypothetical world where save games are baked onto a CD. You know, the save is baked into it, and you essentially can only play from 38 hours to the end of the game because you can't delete it and you can't start over. That's crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of these companies are, the ways they're coming up with to try and hurt used game sales, like Fear 3 actually has basically the one-time use code thing, and you can't access half of the multiplayer maps, and you can't access the effing run mode, you know, unless you buy it new. And, you know, it's not too big of a deal for me personally, but there's a large gaming populace that rents games. Like, that's all, you know, that's how they enjoy them. And when they miss out on this stuff, it really ticks them off. And if there ever was a chance of them buying a full version of the game in the future, some of the forum posters I've seen on our site, they're like, well, I don't really care. It's not worth it now. You know, it's leaving a sour taste in their mouth in general about that company or publisher or whatever. So you know, in essence, it might be hurting sales in the long run. Yeah. But yeah. I will say that FIFA 11 that I just bought, you know, it has the online pass thing in it. The price difference between the used version and the new version was exactly $10. So it made no sense for me to buy the used version since the online pass is $10. It would have basically made it the same price as the new version. So, you know, I think that also the used game market needs to get smarter about it as well.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, let's move on and talk about body count.
Yeah, you know, what I thought was interesting about this story was body count completely dropped off our radar for a good year and a half or so. We saw nothing from it. Apparently the game was at E3. I didn't see that. In fact, I don't even know if I saw Codemasters there. That's who's publishing that. But it's coming out at the end of August in 2 months. So it went from, like, non-existent to coming out.
That's never good.
Yeah, so that's never a good sign for a game. It's pretty surprising. And when I pressed some of PR about the co-op mode in the game, which is, quote-unquote, separate modes, they wouldn't release any details yet. So that's also kind of like a iffy thing. It sounds like it's just going to be survival mode, basically, and probably only two players. But yeah, so that's going to be one to keep an eye on, but I wouldn't have high hopes for it just because of, you know, it went through kind of a whole controversy thing where Stuart Black, who created the series, left it and said some nasty things and this and that.
Yeah,
so.
Well, Black was one of those games that was, it was what it was. And I fully expect body count to be the exact same game.
Yeah, that's...
But shinier.
Yeah.
Maybe more exploding barrels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
so let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's move on and talk about A Valley Without Wind. And I'm going to let you take this one because, honestly, I haven't followed this one too closely and... It looks like they've changed it considerably. So
well, yeah, so...
I remember where it came from.
The game was an isometric, top-down adventure, open-world, Minecraft-ish game. It kind of... I don't know. It's tough to get a grasp on exactly what the game is doing. It's taken a lot of inspiration from, like I said, games like Minecraft. But also, you know, the action RPG kind of a thing. So, yeah, all the videos and screens and stuff up to this point have been isometric, top-down kind of a thing. But they suddenly decided to switch to side-scrolling.
So they're turning it into Terraria.
Yeah, basically. But the examples that they said were it's more close to something like Super Metroid or Castlevania.
Go on.
Though it's still going to have like an overworld map that you can kind of go between areas. But the side-scrolling parts are going to be pretty huge. And it, honestly, the game looks a lot better. Before, it looked kind of almost amateur. Now the graphics really kind of come together a bit. But yeah, you're right. Terraria is a good example of a recent game that kind of took a lot of Minecraft inspiration and worked really well.
Yeah.
So we'll see how this does for Valley Without Wind. You know, Chris Park, the guy who owns Arkane Games, like... It's just insanely dedicated to his craft and
he's really good at getting information out there. I know he, whenever there's news for the game, he basically, you know, sends all the details anyone could possibly want.
Yeah. Yeah. He's very descriptive. He's very verbal. You know, he's very quick to, if I ever have a question and I know I can just email him and he's quick to respond and he's straight to the point. He won't BS.
And he has posted in on our boards before.
Yeah.
In relation to some of his other stuff. So.
Yeah. And he's a big fan of co-op in general, which is good. He's one of those guys that thinks every game pretty much deserves to have co-op in it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's move on and talk about something that could potentially be really disappointing. And that's that Battlefield 3, its co-op campaign, is limited to two players.
What?
What? And it's only 10 maps, and it's separate from the main campaign. And, you know, that hasn't told me that there's actually a co-op campaign, really. To me, that seems like it could be 10 separate scenarios.
Yeah.
It's like, here's a map. Here's a little story for this map. You play it with two people. Yeah. Now here's another map. I don't know. And it was such a throwaway quote mentioning it that,
yeah,
you know, it's like, oh yeah, we got a co-op campaign. There's 10 maps, two players.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
It's the way they made it sound. It sounds just like Spec Ops and Modern Warfare.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. I'm hoping it's one of those things that, like, maybe it was taken out of context wrong, or, I don't know.
Who knows? But in case, you know, I'm definitely not playing Battlefield 3 for the co-op. I'm a big fan of the Battlefield's multiplayer offerings, and, I'll definitely be playing that, but it would have been nice to have a strong co-op game in there.
Agreed.
But
yeah,
until they actually give us some solid details on it, I'm not going to hold out hope. And because with that series, and even with like Modern Warfare, they know what sells that game, and it's the competitive multiplayer.
Yeah.
And they're going to put 120% of their dev time into making that good, and anything else they can tack on is definitely not going to be as polished, but I'm willing to be surprised. So let's talk about Brink a little bit more, since we already mentioned it. And the first Brink, or first DLC, I should say, is due soon. All we heard was early July. And it's going to be called the Agents of Change Pack. It'll have two new maps, new class ability for each class, some new weapon attachments, and some new outfits. And, well, that's all well and good. You know, they added a UAV and a napalm grenade and things like that. But one of the new character outfits is called the Sad Punk. The Sad Punk. I hope that it makes your character look like an emo crybaby. With, like, 800 piercings all over the place. He's like, oh.
And lots of eyeliner.
I'm sad. I have a Misfits haircut. Mwah. That would make me laugh, but it's probably got a bandana with a sad clown hobo, you know, painted on it or something. Which would be okay, too, actually. Yeah.
But, yeah, that's only free for the first 2 weeks.
That's right.
So, I would to know when they're going to release some of the pre-order DLC. Like the Doom stuff and the I think Rage and some of that stuff was pretty cool looking, actually.
Yeah. So let's move on and talk about some quick stuff real quick. I didn't watch that id video, so I'll gloss over it.
Yeah, well, the funny thing about the id video was, I just want to mention it, it's definitely worth watching. We posted a video from id about Rage, and basically the quote was, you know, this is the best thing we've ever done. But if you watch the video, the id guys basically, like, talk a lot of smack. They're basically like, we're awesome. We created first-person shooters. We're awesome. We have John Carmack. We're awesome. Like, it's just, it's funny. And, like, they have every right to say it, because when they brag about it, they brag about their technology. And they brag, you know, and they brag about what they've done.
I know, but it comes, like, these days, you know, when you remember the old days when, the, you know, it was like Quake 3 engine versus Unreal.
Yeah.
And there's always that war back and forth. And Unreal Engine has fucking cock-stomped them.
Yeah.
In the past 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, it really hasn't pushed anything. You know, after, I mean, basically the last great engine they had was id Tech 3.
Is the Quake 3 engine that was, yeah, that gave us, you know, Call of Duty, Call of Duty 2, yeah, and stuff like
that. And there's still stuff that uses it. But it's, yeah, Unreal is just, because Epic changed Unreal into something else, you know.
Well, what Epic did with Unreal was they baked it into the console APIs.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when the PS3 came out, they said they were going to have Unreal Engine 3 support, like, right out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they did the smart move, and I love id, but, you know, I don't think they can really come from a position where they talk smack, because if in all honesty, the last great game they made, in my opinion, was Quake 3 Arena. Like, Doom 3 was fun, but not great. Quake 4 was, well, that was done by, what, Raven?
Yeah.
And, you know, what was the last thing id has done that has just completely blown anyone away?
Yeah.
Like, even Doom 3 had just about no multiplayer. You know, it was there, but it wasn't great.
Yeah, well, it wasn't so much they're talking smack about their great games, but their great technology and their great pedigree of where they've come from and John Carmack.
Basically, if John Carmack was saying all that stuff, I'd buy it.
Yeah, and he was for a lot of it.
Okay,
There's a part in it he basically talks about. He's like, we have the greatest, we have the greatest looking console game right now that runs at double the frame rate of anybody else out there. And like, those are like almost his exact words.
It's like reading his Twitter feed.
Yeah, well, reading his Twitter feed, it automatically makes you smarter.
Yeah, it's my proxy. It's like getting your baby to listen to Mozart.
Yeah.
It's like, I read John Carmack's Twitter feed. I understand every eighth post he makes, but hey.
The mathematical C++ stuff that comes out of his mouth is just like, holy moly.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to Rage because it seems pretty different. Like it just looks like something I wouldn't expect it to make.
It's actually looking better and better to me. Honestly, when I first saw it, I was just kind of like, eh. But the more and more they kind of release on it, I think it's going to be a pretty solid game.
Yeah, early on it was definitely hard to separate it from Borderlands. Mm-hmm. But now that they've released a lot more of it and they put out that iPad and iPhone game, so you can kind of see the art style and everything, it is different. But early on, especially when it sounded like it was going to be coming out around the same time as Borderlands, it was really... It was really kind of a tough sell for me.
Yeah, definitely check the video out. It's a solid video too, just in general, to see some stuff behind the scenes and some.
You want to see a video? You need to watch this Saints Row the third 8-minute video that just came out, which is basically Volition saying, "Why the F not?"
Yeah,
you know, we're street gang members, right? San Andreas style, we fight for our turf and, people know who we are. But now they're all megastars and celebrities. So why not drive a gigantic vacuum cleaning van around the world that sucks people up and loads them into a cannon so you can shoot people out of the cannon? Why not? Why not have a laser beam wielding, VTOL fighter jet that you can just, used to destroy things at will? Why not? Why not run up to random people and pile drive them? Why not break the neck of the random, bystander? Why not beat this man to death with a double-headed dildo? These are questions that Volition is asking, and no one's given them an answer, so they've just gone ahead and done it. And it's absolutely hilarious, and I must admit, I've never played a Saints Row game, but that video really kind of made me want to.
Yeah, well, my most memorable thing from Saints Row games, I think it's the second one that had this, is there's a mini game in it called Insurance Fraud. And basically, the idea is you have to throw yourself in front of traffic or whatever, do as much damage to yourself as you possibly can. And you get money for the more damage you cause to yourself. So that was a lot of fun, and it definitely looks like they took kind of like that whole thing and just worked it up.
I remember people were talking about in 2, you could run around in like a hot dog on a stick outfit or something.
Yeah, it had ridiculous outfits and stuff, so.
And you could run around naked or whatever. So let's wrap up the news and talk about, Let's just say you can rent games at Redbox kiosks now, but I really hope you don't care about selection, because it's not very deep yet.
There's like 10.
It's kind of like the Redboxes themselves, though. They're pretty limited to, new... Like, there's a bunch of... Like, most of the stuff that's brand new is not going to be there quite yet, but newish stuff and, like, a random selection of back catalog, and that seems to be what the games are, but... They only have a deal with certain publishers, right?
I think that's what's going on.
Yeah. So, cheap rentals, go in front of a 7-Eleven, rent a game, I guess. Anyway, let's talk about the most exciting co-op experience ever. And that is Farm Machines Championships.
Woohoo! Let's do it!
And you can play co-op and drive a combine harvester.
It doesn't get any better than that, my friend.
I don't see it being any better than that. It sounds obvious. It sounds like game of the year.
The best quote we had from that post was, someone said, "Did you notice in all the screenshots the miles per hour doesn't go above 8?" Even though it has it goes up to 60, all of them they top out about 8.
Excellent. Yes, I like how none of the combines are going above 9 miles per hour.
That's so awesome. I can't wait. It's going to be the best co-op experience ever.
There better be a drag race mode. Make it like a Top Gear challenge. That seems like a missed opportunity.
Yes.
If you ask me.
The graphics on it are pretty solid, too. I mean,
yeah. I mean, well, you got to admit, farm equipment isn't exactly high poly in real life. They're kind of boxy.
Yeah, this is
they can expend their polygon budget on the terrain. You know, maybe use some speed tree, get some realistic trees in there.
Yeah. So that's a 360 and a PC game, so it'll be interesting. I'll be curious to see how many copies the 360 version sells.
I think if it sells really well, we need to petition Japan to release some of those train simulators. I feel that's the next logical
step. Have you ever played the Microsoft Train Simulator on PC?
No.
I actually did.
I played Midtown Madness.
Now there's a series I'd love to see come back.
And Combat Flight Simulator.
Anyway.
And Fury 3. And I think those are the only Microsoft games I've played on a PC in the olden times. And Fury 3 was awesome, even if it was just Terminal Reality.
Yeah.
Or Terminal Velocity, pardon me. There's a series that needs to come back. Terminal Velocity. Even though it was only one game. it was what I actually spent more time than playing Duke 3D on that Duke 3D disc.
Yeah.
Was, you know, there was the demos for all the other Apogee games.
Right.
And there was things like Wacky Wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. Yeah, Terminal Velocity. Awesome. Shareware never dies. So, normally at this point we'd talk about some kind of feature review. And really, after the gigantic E3 special last week, there's really hasn't been anything that's warranted a huge discussion. I mean, we could talk about the video games Supreme Court case, but I'm not a lawyer, Nick's not a lawyer, and we all read game politics. So, you know, if you want to read about that, go there. But just know that, you know, First Amendment is, you know, covering our ass for right now, which is kind of cool. Even though two justices said, "I don't know about this," which was kind of sad, but they made reasonable arguments, I guess. I guess if you're a Supreme Court justice, I can respect your opinion, even if I disagree. In any case, I'd like to debut a new feature. Kat has taken kind of the charge with the Co-Optimist community voice on the site, rounding up the blog posts and everything. But I felt that we could kind of tap into that market, engage the community a little more, and give a shout-out to user blogs that we find particularly interesting. You know, we see people trying to organize game nights and things like that through it. And every now and then someone will post a really thoughtful review or a fun story that augments other bits of the site. I've seen people talk about co-op couples type stuff on their user blogs, and I thought it was kind of cool. And what really cemented it was our own Jim McLaughlin. The past couple weeks has decided to open up the curtain to check out what goes on behind the scenes at Co-Optimus. And after we gave everyone their requisite dose of eye bleach, because no one wants to see that. I thought it was a really cool way, you know, because it's a really cool way to engage the community, because we're answering questions that a lot of people have about game websites, games journalism, and such in general. And, you know, you go to something like 1UP or whatever, or IGN, you're probably not going to get a response, but since, you know, we're still small enough, and we don't have our heads completely in the clouds with our own awesomeness yet. We all took the time to answer a bunch of questions, so you should point yourself to Jim's user blog and take a look, because there's some fun stuff in there. And you can see how bright-eyed and bushy-tailed our newer editors are versus the people that have been doing this for 5 or 10 years who are grizzled old Vietnam vets. And, yeah, so check it out. And that's going to just about do it, so let's wrap everything up in a nice package and tie it up with a neat bow. And let's talk about some upcoming co-op releases. We're in kind of the dregs of summer right now. It's just after E3 and kind of in that July area when not much comes out. And then August hits and then the fall season gets, you know, well on its way. But on Tuesday, very highly anticipated game comes out. That is Earth Defense Force Insect Armageddon for the PS3 and 360. And
die, bugs, die.
I don't know about you, man, but I can't wait to punch spiders to the moon with my shotgun.
Indeed.
And on the 13th, we have Miss Splosion Man, which has its two girls, one cup mode.
One controller.
Two girls, one controller. That's right. Which is kind of awesome and insane. It's like those people that could play Ikaruga, like two consecutive games of Ikaruga at the same time.
Yeah, with two different controllers.
I don't know. That's insane to me. And I guess Warhammer 40K Kill Team is coming out the same day.
Yeah, it's supposed to be around that time.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I like my Dawn of War, but I also like 40K, so I might have to check that one out. And, man, we had a lot of reviews, so let's just kick into it. There was Dungeon Siege 3, Fear 3, Cars 2, which is probably better than the movie. Operation Flashpoint Red River. I think we can agree it's one of the most unfortunately named games. Number of times that Jim told me he had to resist making the obvious joke when he posted about it tells me that there's something wrong with the name. Because it's Jim.
Yeah, and that's funny because I never even thought about that. Now I won't be able to not think about that.
Yeah, well, there was a review for the Martian/Colonial America shooter, Jamestown. And we had our Beyond Co-op reviews for June, which contained Duke Forever, L.A. Noire, Alice, Infamous 2, Witcher 2, Red Johnson's Chronicles. Trying not to make another obvious
Yeah, that one's obvious.
And Front Mission Evolved and the movie tie-in to Thor, which is apparently abysmal. And there are also reviews for Trenched and Green Lantern Rise of the Manhunters.
Mark had a good subtitle for his Thor review. It was Thor, God of Mediocrity.
Yeah. God of bad box art, too. It's like, let's take a production still from the movie and put it on the box with some words. All right. And, you know, you read Co-Optimus. You know our features are awesome, and we post them constantly. And since the last time we talked, we've had another episode of On the Download, which is number 31, called Digital Hoarding. It's Co-op Casual Friday for Defenders of the Realm. Co-op Classics for one of my favorites, Radiant Silver Gun, which I hope that actually, you know, finally comes out on Xbox Live Arcade.
Yeah, it's been talked about forever.
We've been talking about forever, and I don't like looking at the $400 Saturn version on eBay and saying, wow, I could buy 20 Saturns and still not, you know, have enough trade-in value for this game. And we had our E3 2011 co-op game of the show, and that went to Dead Island, which really intrigues me because, well, it had an awesome trailer. I really kind of fell off for me from there, but heard a lot of great stuff from E3. And let's see here. You should buy our shirts from our Split Reason affiliate store. We're running out of which ones?
The Revolution ones.
Yes, the Co-op Revolution. The red shirt that's perfect for a summer day. You know, nice bright red shirt. keep it nice and cool. You can leave some feedbacks on iTunes. You can leave feedback on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at CoOptimist without the dash. And you can get our mobile phone app on the Android store. And are we still crossing our fingers about the Windows Phone 7 app, Nick?
Yeah, it looks like it got approved, but it's still not up on the actual store. So I don't know if there's another step or something it has to go through or...
All right. Well, for the three of you with Windows Phone 7 devices, you can look forward to that. And for the rest of you, you can always hit our mobile website on the mobile device of your choice. And leave us a voicemail. Eventually, we'll use this feature. The number is 646-926-6748. And what happened? We had some queued and ready to go.
Yeah, we kind of got lost in everything. We'll have to start that up again. Be more prepared.
I know there was a really good question about Demon's Souls, and I think we should get Andrew on, because he and I played the crap out of Demon's Souls, and we'll probably geek out about it.
We could do that. We'll get Andrew on and
yeah,
make it a three-way.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And speaking of three-ways, I gotta go somewhere.
Oh! Hey-o!
Yeah, that's gonna do it for this episode of the Co-Opticast. I am Mike, that was Nick, and we will chat with you in 2 weeks.